Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
Listeners can't see this, but Trevor, you're committing. I think it could be a fashion faux pas wearing shorts after Labor Day.
No.
I know you can't wear
these are,
can't wear white.
You can't wear white. That's shorts? Right. No, these are stylish, so they're still good. But yes, happy first, it's like a first week of school for a lot of people out there. I grew up in the South, so we're already in school by now. Northeasterners, I guess you guys start school this week.
Well, we used to, back in my day, it was always after. It was usually the Wednesday after Labor Day, but now it's, something like the last week in August.
Happy, I guess it's like classes back in session. Everybody's chilling out. Hope you had a nice summer here. I guess if you're obviously a chart watcher, this will be forever remembered as the summer of Old Town Road. Songs of the Summer Race is winding down, and by winding down I mean actually officially over, because summer's over and Old Town Road, no surprise, is officially the Billboard Song of the Summer. So kind of a nice tidy package there that Lil Nas X dominated it. We in the last couple of weeks have been able to look at a few new number ones. We're going to continue that trend this week, and you know, it feels like now that Old Town Road is on its way out to pasture, feels like the chart is opening up for everybody else.
I thought we'd hit every horse pun we could, but out to pasture.
Yeah, we put it out to pasture. Yeah. You know, look at that.
All right. So, talking another new number one coming up here on the Billboard Hot 100 this week. Taylor Swift. We were talking about Taylor all last week in the podcast. New album debuts at number one on the Billboard 200. So we'll get into both of those new number ones. Also going to be talking Americana Fest, happening again in Nashville next week, September 10th through the 15th. So a great event of seminars and music and learning about the industry. It's for fans and artists and everyone who's into Americana folk music. So we're going to talk about that coming up as well with Jed Hilly, Executive Director of the Americana Music Association. He's our special guest coming up. So it's all on the way. Also, this is our second podcast this week, a podcast with Trisha Yearwood and Leslie Simon as well, GM of Pearl and Gwendolyn Records. So Jim Asker in Nashville, our Nashville-based chart manager, chatted with Trisha and Leslie about Trisha's new album, Every Girl, and so much more. So I can check that out online as well. But right now, another, new number one on the Billboard Hot 100. Here's the top 10 this week.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10. Number 9.
'Cause I don't care when I'm with my baby yet. All the bad things disappear. But you're making me feel that maybe I am somebody. I can deal with the bad nights when I'm with my baby yet.
Number 8.
Can we just talk? Can we just talk about where we're going before we get lost? Let me out. I've never
Number 7.
Ain't never got you know it being modest. Poppin' ship it only cause you know you poppin', yeah. You got it, girl, you got it. You got it, girl, you got it.
Number 6.
I got red, I got blue, what you want? The Chanel, Balenciaga, Louis Vuitton. She know I got the Fendi Prada when I am alone. I needed me a Diorada, I need me the one. I started from the bottom, you can see the way.
Number 5.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna I can't no more.
I got the horses in the back.
Number 4.
Cause shade never made anybody less gay. So, oh, 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 you need to calm down. You're being too loud. And I'm just like, oh, 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 you need to just stop.
Number 3. Number 2.
I love it when you call me senorita. I wish I could pretend I didn't need ya. But every touch is ooh la la la. It's true la la la. Ooh, I should be running. Ooh, you know I love it when you call me senorita.
And number 1.
Alright, turnover at the number one spot been pretty rampant these past couple of weeks. We saw last week Shawn Mendes, Camila Cabello get to number one with Senorita. Week before that was Billie Eilish. This week, check that out, it is Lizzo's turn. The song is Truth Hurts. The journey of the song has been nothing short of remarkable. If you remember, the song actually came out in 2017. Lizzo had put it out, and she's been pretty open about this. Around the time that Truth Hurts came out, people were not really, you know, she didn't have nearly the star profile that she does now. She's put out a couple projects. None of them have gotten, you know, significant heat behind them. And when she put out Truth Hurts, she had mentioned before that she actually thought about quitting music that day because, you know, she was putting these songs out. Nobody really cared. There was no reception. And so pretty ironic and kind of, if you like, you know, fan of happy endings or nice tie-ups, pretty great that it actually is this song then that becomes her very first number one hit. The song that she, you know, very well could have been her last song, the song yeah. she was going to kind of give up afterwards.
I like how she turns around today here on Tuesday. She retweeted herself from a couple years ago when she put the song out and said, I'm so proud of this song. I think it's the best video I've ever done. I'm going to keep working this. And then she retweeted today, 2 years later, saying, and I still am.
Yeah, so it's been a long road for this song. And, of course, the jump came in 2019, really, when it was featured in a Netflix film, performed at a Coachella, and, a couple things kind of added up to a nice kind of perfect storm that started getting the song a lot more attention. And, I mean, ever since then, it's been on a massive roll, performed it at the BET Awards, so a huge reception. I know she was especially retweeting when Rihanna was in the crowd, really excited about that. A little over a week ago, performed it at the MTV VMAs alongside her song Good As Hell. So Queen Latifah was in the crowd for that one. A lot of, again, same kind of reaction shots really helped that out. Also, a remix with DaBaby came out that impacts this week as well. So a lot of, a lot of things kind of lining up just in time for Lizzo to get that really long-awaited number one.
Yeah.
I mean, not to, pat myself on the back too much. I'll admit I didn't call this spot on, but I remember at the top of the summer, we did a little Songs of the Summer column with a few people here at Billboard. And one of the questions was, what song, if Old Town Road was not going to be the song of the summer, which it is, the question was, what's the main competition? What's a song that really, could take the mantle for Song of the Summer? So
you have your phone. Are you actually going to read your own words?
No, I'm going to summarize them though.
All right.
This posted June 3rd. So we're talking 3 months ago. And I had said,
you can call it yourself. It's okay.
I said my current pick is a song from 2017. I said, Lizzo's Truth Hurts. I said, she's a very 2019 pop star, which I feel is very true, defying stereotypes of who and what a black woman can be in this music industry. tops it off with a swaggy personality ripe for social media and refuses to play by convention, bouncing across genre lines with a mix of pop, R&B, and hip-hop. And this is just when Truth Hurts had just gotten inside the top 40 of the Hot 100. So even though it wasn't Song of the Summer, you know, I didn't quite catch on to that. I'm actually pretty impressed, because especially when you have a song like, you know, that comes from a Netflix moment, a revival. I mean, you know, they can be hot for a couple of weeks as people kind of, right. You know, I mean, it's not like this Netflix film. I mean, the film itself didn't blow up in a way that, you know, you couldn't ignore this song. And then, I mean, when you think about the lineup for this song, I mean, this was right after the album Because I Love You had come out. And Juice was the single that they were pushing with Lizzo.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And that was, you know, and the plan was for all this to happen. And then Truth Hurts kind of dropped out of nowhere and kind of, you know, ruined that in some ways.
I think we had conversations really about which should really be the radio single. Should it be Juice or should it be Truth Hurts? We were going back and forth.
Yeah, I know you thought Juice was a way more like pop, you know, sort of cut and paste, made for top 40, which it is. Yeah, I mean, it is. Right? But I was kind of surprised that Truth Hurts just zoomed past that, bypassed it, got all the momentum and really forced itself to become the Lizzo single of the moment.
Well, just to clarify that, I do think Truth Hurts is a lot catchier, but I just think Juice sounds like what radio sounds like. So the hook won out over just the production.
Yeah, I remember you saying that Truth Hurts. I think this wasn't actually on a microphone, but I remember a side convo where you said Truth Hurts had a better hook, but you thought Juice. I mean, kind of. In some ways, kind of like that old. I think a Juice would have fit better in like a 2013. Like I think in that like moment of Get Lucky and like maybe even like a Blurred Lines, kind of like a throwback Pharrell Williams produced moment.
Right.
I think Juice would have been like a smash in 2013, but in 2019, Truth Hurts, you know, took the crown, took the momentum, really. I mean, took that whole Lizzo moment and became, you know, for all the plans and the attention and the work that went into, you know, strategizing this rollout for Because I Love You and Juice and everything. I mean, just goes to show, you know, in 2019, the people will tell you what they want, and the people want Truth Hurts.
What's your pick for Song of the Fall? Song of the Winter, since you're on
such a hot streak.
Yeah, you're the first.
Nah, I gotta assess. I'll have to come back next week with some contenders. But it feels like, I don't know, it feels like there's still a lot of artists out there people are waiting on, a lot of open room, especially after Old Town Road. Now the vacuum's kind of, you know, that balloon's kind of burst. So feels like there's still a lot of things out there.
Seasons change and our love went cold. Feed the flag, cause we can't let go.
Yeah, I guess Walbert talking about maybe the number one wheelhouse turning as it's turned the past couple of weeks. Post Malone Circles is finally out, which is a song that we'd waited for and should have been out a couple weeks ago, but a little bit delayed. Music video came out today, which is Tuesday, September 3rd. So obviously Post Malone's been in the number one spot three times before, so he's always a hot contender. The album comes out this Friday as well. So
he's really, I think, he's surprising me. He's probably surprising a lot of people with every song he puts out now. He's showing different sides of his talent. I thought Goodbyes was really one of the best songs he's put out. And this new song, Circles, it's maybe the most pure pop song he's put out. I wasn't really expecting that.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, he's kind of the guy who's made that transition from the rap universe to the pop universe with the most ease. I mean, we saw him top the mainstream top 40 chart a couple times already. I mean, he's nominated in pop categories at the Grammy Awards. So there's a real, you know, ease of acceptance between all those genre points where he probably is like the most accessible artist to all of those realms. So, yeah, for him to, you know, continue to do this, I mean, I think he's a very talented musician in general. So, I mean, nice for him, you know, on his third album to keep experimenting with things and keep trying. And the feature list came out today and it's a bit wide ranging, so interested to see what he comes up with for number three, but glad that, you know, he's not just trying to do the same thing, rinse and repeat, not give us Stony 2 or Beer Bongs and Bentleys 2. So we'll see how that plays out for sure on the charts next week.
All right, so this week on the Hot 100, it's all about Lizzo celebrating. It's about you celebrating. Trevor, your prediction?
I'm glad for Lizzo, and I'll take a little slice and be glad for myself as well. I mean, you got to admit that. I mean, these are long shots. I mean, the song was just inside the top 40, and for it to go, you know, all this way to number one, I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. Also celebrating Minnesota Vikings. They're number one.
No man on the Minnesota Vikings. Truth hurts, neither
preseason poll. Yeah.
Not maybe in a lot of preseason polls, but they're the only NFL team right now that can say they're in the number one song on the Hot 100. So I was actually thinking, have there been other songs where NFL teams were mentioned? And I thought of at least one big hit. Remember this one?
I'm such a baby, cause the dolphins make me cry.
Hootie and the Blowfish. Dolphins. Darius Rucker cry. Only want to be with you. He admitted it.
Okay, so we got the Miami Dolphins. We got the Minnesota Vikings. We'll have to...
As a Patriots fan, I don't want to play this one. I don't want to mention it, but I guess we should at least mention the Super Bowl Shuffle by Chicago Bears, Shuffling Crew, when they beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl in 1986. And normally I hate when a song peaks at number 41 because it's so close to being a top 40 hit, but that song stopped at number 41.
You're okay with that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
All right. The other big news this week on the Hot 100 and Billboard 200, so... no surprise, Taylor Swift, Lover, comes in at number one on the Billboard 200, the biggest week since. No surprise, her last album, Reputation, back in 2017, on the Hot 100 in the top 10, you just heard. You Need to Come Down comes back into the top 10 at number four, got up number two, underneath Old Town Road back in June. And a new top 10, her 25th, Lover, the title cut, ties Taylor Swift actually with Elvis Presley for 10th most top 10s all time on the Hot 100, so they each have 25. She has 18 songs on the Hot 100 this week, all 18 from Lover. They all chart this week.
I want to rep for the Elvis fans in the room that, yeah, you know, who know his career.
Yeah, make the disclaimer.
Who know his career.
Right.
Unfortunately for Elvis Presley, started a little too soon. Hot 100 is a 1958 chart. Elvis Presley, a 1955 guy. So a lot of those early hits, the Heartbreak Hotel, Hound Dog, Don't Be Cruel, actually not... not Hot 100 hits,
right?
Unfortunately, which, I mean, as an Elvis fan, I feel like I have to, you know, give that asterisk every time. But, you know, still, nothing, not to take away from Taylor at
all. Also, if you're going to boast about your prediction, remember last week on the podcast, my pick for the next single, well, after Lover, we all agreed Lover should be the next single. But then I said after that, The Man should be the next single. That's the highest debuting of all the songs this week, number 23.
I would be complex. I would be cool.
I will say I don't know why
I'm not going to quote myself like you did.
That's okay. That's okay. But I was listening to that album again, and the Man really stood out. Like that's definitely been the song that I've gone back to more than. I mean, at first I was worried it might be a little too intrapersonal to work as a single. If you want to talk about sort of cross marketability and everything, but I don't know. I mean, you know. There seems to be a big fan base, especially like reading some of the comments on websites and things, you know, who people are like, ooh, she she said feminism, stepped on their necks. Like, so there's, you know, even though it's sort of specific to her circumstances, in a lot of ways, it, you know, a lot of people can kind of probably find themselves in that song to some degree, to some situation where you feel like, you know, you've been in that same boat thinking to yourself, like, you know, if I were a dude, none of this would be happening in the same way.
Yeah. So all 18 songs on the Hot 100, that's the most ever for a woman in a week. Billie Eilish had that record for over 4 months. She had 14 on the Hot 100 in 1 week in April when We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? Debuted at number one on the Billboard 200. So Billie had 14 songs on the Hot 100 in 1 week. Taylor has 18. So yeah, new record among women. Drake has the overall record with 27 last year when Scorpion came out. But yeah, no, huge week for Taylor. She's up to 95 Hot 100 hits total now, so she could join Nicki Minaj at some point as the only women with 100 hits, at least each, on the Hot 100.
So you're leaving in the morning on the early train. I could say everything's all right. I could pretend and say goodbye.
One other new music, so everyone's focusing on the Lover album. But so we're taping this on Tuesday. Yesterday just came down a new set, a new BBC Radio 1 Live Lounge performance that Taylor Swift did in New York on Labor Day, Monday. She covered one of my favorite songs, one of my favorite artists, Phil Collins' song, Can't Stop Loving You.
'Cause I can't stop loving you. No, I can't stop.
Original by Phil Collins was a number one hit in 2002 on the AC chart. It was his eighth and most recent number one. She did a really nice version of that. So if anyone's already tired of Lover, there's even more newer new Taylor Swift music.
Taylor's always been pretty solid with her cover choices, especially in those live situations. I know a lot of people really still fan of her cover of Riptide by Vance Joy that she did around the time 1989 was coming out, so about almost 5 years ago. But yeah, she usually is always very, you know, very, very smart with that. And I think still, I always say this, I think she would absolutely murder an MTV Unplugged set. I really think she would do a good job with that.
Well, you remember she did that CMT Crossroads with Def Leppard back in, I think it was 2008?
No.
Yeah.
I remember, no. I remember she did the Thug Story with T-Pain.
Yeah.
But
Def Leppard as well.
I didn't know she did that, Def Leppard. Was it stripped down or was it just like a...
Not really. No. It was pretty full on.
Oh. I'm just telling you, get her in that room with like her, you know, acoustic guitar, kind of intimate venue, like an MTV Unplugged album. I bet you, I'm telling you.
Vocally, she sounds great on this cover. This is her and very minimal production. I think it's a great vocal. And going way back to early Taylor, too, she covered Umbrella.
Now it's raining more than ever. Know that we'll still have each other. You can stand under my umbrella.
Could be your next album, Taylor.
The covers.
The covers collection.
How did you? The covers collection. Yeah, they're kind of, Taylor made the covers album. Maybe. No, I don't know. Gary doesn't. Okay, I think that was that bad, but apparently Gary has a look of disdain on his face.
I don't think we've come up with anything better than covers collection.
Okay. Okay.
We got time. Lover just came up.
I kind of like, but I guess Taylor made makes it sound like she like.
But wrote, she didn't make these. Songs.
It's almost
they're covers.
Yeah.
She would do the worst.
Maybe
thing
be for better. It. She did. Well, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No offense.
Okay. Well, yeah. That. Yeah. Maybe you could spin it.
Taylor not made. Not Taylor made.
Not there. You, that's gonna sell itself. Yeah. The marketing is just beautiful.
All right. Big week this week for Taylor Swift. Big week for Lizzo. Next week, big week for Americana Fest in Nashville. So it's the 20th annual Americana Fest. I was there in 2016. So many performances, so many showcases in Nashville. Trevor, you went to Vanderbilt in Nashville. So you know, obviously, the reputation Nashville has as a music city. But I think it just goes to even a more exponential level for these 6 days coming up September 10th through 15th in Nashville next week for Americana Fest. Beyond all the music, beyond all the networking opportunities, all the seminars that are going on, any places you recommend, whether it's where should people eat? What else should you do in Nashville?
Oh gosh. It's tough because I haven't been in Nashville in a little while, and it feels like the town is, I mean, in the past 4 or 5 years, really, really exploded. A lot of people probably would say if you're going down there for music, you want to check out probably the Country Music Hall of Fame, which they renovated and redid recently. So that's, I mean, really nice. Anywhere down in Broadway, people love the honky tonks. I mean, it's really a big place for a lot of celebrities, you know, to open up their own bars. Florida Georgia Line has a bar down there, I think. Obviously, Margaritaville is Jimmy Buffett's over there, I think. I want to say, hopefully, Jason Aldean, I think, or somebody opened a bar not too long ago either. But yeah, it seems to be like that's sort of one of the new entrepreneurial moves down there. So check out any of those riverfront places. I mean, food, you probably can't go wrong with just about anywhere. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, but if anything, I think if you've never been to Nashville or whatnot, I think the vibe of the city is something that's really, really like lovely for a lot of people. Probably a great time of year to go as well, where it's, you know, not going to be in the thick of summer, so it should be cooling off a little bit, but it's not going to be, you know, you probably won't need a jacket or anything like that. So yeah, I mean, for anybody that's heading down there, I mean, really just soak it up. And it's really becoming, you know, one of the hot cities in all of the United States, really, in terms of just, you know, bustling population. A lot of people just trying to check out the vibe there as a regional powerhouse. So many bachelorette parties come through there, so you know it's like a destination hotspot. And I will say something that has spread from Nashville is the hot chicken market. I feel like everywhere now has like a Nashville hot chicken, you know, if they have like any kind of chicken on their menu. I was in London, like, I mean, I think it was like a TGI Fridays or whatever. But even in London, they had like a, you know, come try the Nashville hot chicken. The official Wikipedia definition says that it's been marinated in a blend of seasoning, flour, fried, and sauced in a paste that's been spiced with cayenne pepper. So it's the spicy paste and the presentation that differentiates it from similar dishes such as buffalo wings.
How many calories?
Well, it depends on how big it is, right?
Get a Diet Coke with it. You're all good.
There you go. It's all about the balance. But yep, find a good place for that. Again, Prince's, Hattie B's, probably the most popular, and brings a lot of water.
All right. So the guy who's been working on Americana Fest since last year, and as soon as this one's over, they're really already planning next year as well. Jed Hilly, executive director of the Americana Music Association. He was in our New York offices recently, stopped by, and we chatted about all things Americana, Americana Fest, some of the stars of the genre, how big really the sound has been this decade, especially. And we brought in Kevin Rutherford, who's been on the podcast before, our rock chart manager. So wrapping things up here on the podcast this week with a deep dive into Americana Fest and Americana. Jed was on the podcast way back in the beginning, right? Right after we started the podcast in 2016. Here he is again now on this week's Billboard Sharpie podcast, Jed Hilly talking Americana Fest.
January, February, March, April, May, I have a little time for you, hop upon that train.
Jed Hilly, welcome to the Billboard Chappy Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
We got Kevin, our rock chart manager, among other things as well, Kevin Rutherford.
Hey, yeah, I'm just mostly here to listen and hear wonderful insights.
Wait, that's what I'm here for.
Well, I want to talk about Americana Fest that's coming up September 10th through 15th. But I guess, first of all, Jed, for people who know music, they've heard the term. A lot of people might hear Americana as a music style. What exactly is it? How do you define it?
Well, I define it by saying if you can taste the dirt through your ears. Yeah. That's Americana. I think the Grammys define it as sort of an amalgam of music that's inspired from a cross-section of American roots music themes and runs through the blues, country, rock and roll, bluegrass, zydeco, gospel. It's not a vertical genre. When you hear Lucinda Williams, you hear the soul from Louisiana, you hear the rock from Tom Petty, and you hear the country from Hank Williams. And by country, I mean old school, traditional country. There's not much crossover in contemporary country today with Americana, given that genre has become very commercial.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You'd think, because a lot of acts who are very welcome now in the Americana world maybe had a long history on country radio, on the country charts. But, yeah, there doesn't seem to be a lot of crossover at all.
I think it started that way. Americana grew in the 90s, really, when the FCC changed the rules and regulations for radio stations. You used to have 10,000 radio stations owned by 10,000 people across the country, and now you've got 10,000 radio stations owned by four. Playlist changed. The commercial, you know, the country music business opted for Garth Brooks and Shania Twain in 1992 and weren't so interested in Roseanne Cash or Emmylou Harris or Dwight Yoakam or Katie Lang or Lyle Lovett, or the list goes on. So you had at that point a clear division between art and commerce. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. It's just there's a difference between commercial art and fine art. The artists in the Americana world are their goal is not to sell out Madison Square Garden. Their goal is to write, is to tell a story through music in the best way they can, period. Sometimes that's a hit.
I was going to say it's not mutually exclusive.
Right. Sometimes that's a hit. And that's, you know, that's where those are great moments, you know, to see that happen. Putting the integrity back into the art form. To me, music consumption, if I can go there, I think Jane Doe in Portland, Maine, listens to Patti Griffin, Muddy Waters, Preservation Hall Band, you know, diverse interests and diverse tastes. But it's all the thread that connects those things is an authenticity, is an integrity. One of my favorite quotes from a journalist about the Americana world and who it is and what it represents is, singers who can sing, players who can play, writers who can write.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of genres in the last decade or so, and I always go back to it's a YouTube world, an iTunes world where there's less barriers. People can find music wherever they want. A lot of genres have blended. So it kind of makes sense that same thing for Americana. Maybe there's more blues influences, more electric than if you might have thought at the beginning. It was just maybe a singer-songwriter, more narrowly defined that way.
Inclusivity is important, you know, and we have a real hard time with that. I had mentioned off mic that we had 1,800 bands apply for a showcase at Americana Fest. Americana Fest is our annual fundraiser. It pays the bills for our not-for-profit organization for the other 11 months and 3 weeks of the year. It is also a community gathering, which is great and really, really fun. But we had 1,800 acts apply this year to play, and we selected around 300. That's a lot of people to say no to.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really hard, you know. And
kind of takes the fun out of saying yes when you're saying no to so many other people.
You know, same thing like with our awards. You know, it's my favorite day and least favorite day of the year because, you know, I love that, you know, this year we were very proud. Our Artist of the Year nominees are Brandi Carlile, Kacey Musgraves, Mavis Staples, and Rhiannon Giddens. I don't know if we're the only award show of our kind that has fielded an all-female slate. Part of me, and I think Brandi and the other three women would agree, would say it's a shame that we have to think of things on those terms because all four of those artists are artists regardless of gender. And then at the same time, you know, I'm thrilled for those four. I'm thrilled that we've made that our membership and community have made that statement, but then there are a whole lot of other artists that worked their tails off last year and probably deserved a slot but didn't get it. When I started in 2007, we had 56 acts. What was important to me was to create a more diverse breadth of what musicians were playing. In the previous 2 years, 32 of the first 56 had played two out of the 3 years. So I had put a rule in at that point that you can't play 2 years in a row. So that allowed us to bring more people in. We slowly went from 56 acts performing during our showcase venues to 65, to 85, to 96, to 110, to 125. To 185, to 230. I mean, it's gotten nuts, and it's gotten very difficult. I'm more proud that we've created more opportunities for artists. We just don't have the resources to field 1,800 bands. We're a small office of five people. We rely heavily on volunteer efforts. And we want every event and, you know, every showcase is an event to me. And we have five showcases in one venue, times 20 different venues over the course of a six-day music festival in Nashville. I want every one of those events to be satisfying for the artist and for the consumer. I want a packed house. Our event is about discovery. So while there is a smattering of bigger names throughout the venue, and we always try to find like the headliner for each slot for each night, which, I mean, it's nuts. Yeah. It's like a crazy jigsaw puzzle. But the beauty of the festival is the best musicologist probably doesn't know 65 to 85% of the artists that are playing. And I can tell you that if you sit in any one of those venues in any given night, there may be one out of five acts that you know, but one of those other acts that you didn't know will knock your socks off.
Right.
And that's all about discovery.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was there in 2016, and I think what hit me most of all is how it just felt like it just totally took over the city. Because as you're saying, Jed, there are so many different venues where shows are happening at night, but also during the day, all the different seminars going on. It just felt like during the day, maybe you'd be learning about songwriting, you'd be learning about the business, and then at night, it was a matter of, well, do I go to this show or do I go to this show? And it just really felt like what a great relationship you have with Nashville at this point.
All of the venue owners, this year we will be using 70 unique venues.
Yeah.
That includes the Ryman, that includes our conference headquarters, the Westin Hotel, and that includes backyards, that includes restaurants, that includes bars, that includes music venues. And of the 70, basically they all give us their rooms for free. Possibly because they know they'll sell a lot of beer. that's also a humbling community experience. It's very much, I think Pace Magazine said it's a cross between South by Southwest and the Grammys. In that structurally, it's very much like South by. We have daytime panels, conference, educational seminars, interviews with big names, hearing their stories. With great journalists on site to do the interviews, again participating on coming on their own dime, and then the integrity that I think the Recording Academy strives for. It is a unique balance that we've been able to carve out with basically no commercial, sponsorship. We don't have any $1 million sponsor deals, and I think the artists like that too.
Since we've been discussing showcases and discovery that you have at the awards every year, and looking at the emerging artist nominations this year, which are a fantastic bunch, if you're able to say, since I know you don't want to necessarily play favorites, but what are some of your favorites of the last year or so that you've discovered on an emerging artist level from Americana that you're really excited to talk to people about?
Well, we have J.S. Andara, Aaron Ray, Yola, and Warren Treaty as our emerging artists. I mean, I don't know if I've ever been so proud of our membership for that slate. Again,
fantastic slate.
Yeah, it's representative of true emerging artists. Each one of them is extraordinary. I appreciate you singling that category out, because to me, that's what it's all about. It's about discovery. We all interface with music in different ways, but I think what excites and everyone, not just in the music business, but fans, everyone gets affected by music, and discovery is such a key part of that. I mean, we all remember when we were in a room, we heard a song, or, we hear a song again 2 years later, 5 years later, 10 years later, and those songs played a role in our lives or were with us at a certain point. They create memories. That's the next generation that's going to be creating memories. Each one of those artists I could go on about. They're beautiful, they're inspiring, they're powerful, Go see them live. They're incredible.
Oh my goodness, right.
I mean, that's the thing about, you know, anybody out there, to me at the end of the day, see live music, experience that, because it can be life-changing. You see somebody get out there on stage and they like grab their either side of the rib cage, crack it open a little and reveal their heart. I mean, to me, that's ballsy, gutsy, brave, and then beautiful at the end of the day. And those four artists I would stack against, you know, against anyone, you know, in a 150-seat room or a 20,000-seat arena. I remember once I went to see Bonnie Raitt, who's a great supporter and ambassador of the association and has been a board member. I remember seeing her at the Ryman one night in Nashville, and she was like, "This sucks because the best musicians in the world are sitting in the audience and I can't make a mistake." You know, it was like, Bonnie Raitt, give me a break, you know, but they all feel that.
Ask your opinion talking about how someone could make music that ends up being kind of different and outside of Americana. But then you have someone like last year at the Americana Awards when Tyler Childers said, when he got the Emerging Artist Award, that he as a country singer, I feel like Americana ain't no part of nothing. And he wasn't really sure how he fit into that. You know, after he said those words last year, you know, what was kind of your reaction personally, maybe even around the office in terms of like what he said?
I thought what Tyler Childers said at the award show last year was very Americana. It is amongst the most irreverent of communities and fan bases that I've experienced in my music career, and I've dabbled in others in the earlier part of my career. I was mixing and matching in all genres of music. That was my job. I think Tyler Childers is an extraordinary artist. And I felt like he earned his stripes in the Americana world, and he was deserving of an Emerging Artist Award. And I think not only was he emerging, I think he's, you know, some I have a great songwriter named Mary Gaucher, who sat on our board, made the comment once about who we are and what we do. And she said, well, we don't necessarily create hits. We help to build careers, and I think we've helped to build Tyler Childers' career. I think he's got a long career ahead of him. How was that? Did I avoid controversy?
I think so. That was a well, yeah, absolutely.
No, he's
that
amazing.
Wasn't very Americana, Jed. You weren't irreverent.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think he was a little shocked to see me at a show about 3 months later.
It is funny though what you said about how you thought his comments were very Americana, because I saw a lot of you know, comments on Facebook that pretty much said the same thing. It's like, oh man, that's about as Americana as you can get.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's again, you know, it's an artist. You know, to each his own. You know, I hope on some level he appreciates our support, and I think on some level he does. I think he may have been surprised. I think he shares what many in the constituency share is maybe a sadness that the commercialism of country music has taken such hold that it's not recognizing a brilliant artist like Tyler Childers, because he is brilliant. He makes great music. He's more rooted, you know, he is an artist that I would say is more rooted in country than, you know, in my horizontal genre that I described earlier. He's rooted more in country than he is in other areas.
Absolutely.
You know, some artists, you know, Nathaniel Rateliff's rooted more in R&B and the blues.
Sure.
They're still part of the community.
As we wrap up towards the end of the decade, I would think you look back on this decade as being a really good one for Americana, from not just, again, it's not based on who has the biggest chart hits, but when you look at Casey and Chris Stapleton and Umford and Sons, there were so many acts that it kind of feels like this decade
Lumineers was
really a really bigger, maybe mainstream moment for Americana than in the past.
Yeah, I think, you know, T-Bone Burnett says you can't keep good music down. I tend to believe in that by and large. I think as an industry, we need help. We need help. I've been spending a lot of time in the last few years, you know, working with a group of incredible people, lobbying for things like the Music Modernization Act, going to D.C., talking to congressmen. That's a trip. I'm always sitting there going, you know, oh, man, they know who I really am. You know, are they listening to me? You know, a lot of things, you know, still need to change. We kind of got caught with our pants down. But the last 10 years has been incredible. And I think the mindset and the nature of an Americana artist kind of saw the foreshadowing. And so, you know, when you had mentioned before about, you know, live and touring be so critical and important to an Americana artist, Americana artists kind of saw it earlier because they were shut out from the from the labels,
right,
and the commercial process. The money that directed the music business in the mid to late 90s, you know, wasn't allowing for the art form to flourish. So it just necessity is the mother of invention is the other term we could use for an Americana artist.
Looking ahead, what challenges lay ahead for the association? What are your goals maybe the next couple of years, 5 years going forward?
You know, the blessing and the curse of our organization is a lack of corporate sponsorship. You know, I haven't quite figured out how to manage it. Around 6 years ago, we had a mission statement that was written in 1999, which is a really long, verbose, five paragraph. We are in the business to support the business of Americana because the business, and I'm like, it drove me nuts for my first few years working there because no music fan wants to hear that. No music lover wants to hear that. And if we're in, you know, in 2007, when I got there, you know, I basically told the board of directors, I said, look, if we're in the business for the business, we're going to go out of business. We need to open this up to a different segment of the world. And it took me a few years to figure it out. And I brought in a consultant to evaluate our mission statement. And she said, if you can't memorize it, then it's not working. And she's like, we got to boil it down to 15 words or so. So we sat around, 25, you know, board members and me and this, you know, strategist and, you know, we little sticky posts on the wall, you know, give me a word for this, give me a word for that, putting them all together. It was an amazing experience. 36 hours later, the mission statement for the mission of the Americana Music Association is to advocate for the authentic voice of American roots music around the world. I think I got it. You can double check on the website.
Under 15 words, too.
You know, right? And I'll tell you what, since we changed that mission statement, our membership has tripled. I mean, we were at about 1,000 members in 2013. Our membership has tripled. The attendance at our event has more than quadrupled. I don't even know, but you know, we're now, you know, have 322 bands, and we can't, you know, we're afraid to grow any more than that because we want every single venue to be full,
right,
for every single artist, and that's a challenge. So, the good news of the rise in attendance, of the rise in participation, and the acceptance, I think, that artists have for us now with the a slight tweak going from we were a business organization to an artist advocacy group has also brought in more money, which is really interesting to, you know, if that is in fact what happened. I mean, to me, that's the one thing that we did significantly as an association in the last 10 years that shifted the approach and the mindset of who we are and what we do. And it is factual that since then we've seen significant growth year in, year out. So it's maintaining that integrity, balancing it as more people start approaching us and wanting to participate.
Another great lineup this year. Artists we just had on the podcast recently, Lizzie Ngo is playing. Lula Wiles, who Kevin and I just saw earlier this year here in New York, they're on there, and 320 or so others. So it's going to be great again, September 10th through the 15th in Nashville. Thank you, Jed, for taking time. I'm almost surprised you can just sit here a little bit ahead of time, so relaxed about this. I feel like you're going to get out of here checking your phone nonstop.
Yeah, you can. I'm worried that my phone buzzing in my back pocket has affected our we're okay. Okay, good.
And also, you were hanging out, I know, with Springsteen last night, so thank you for slumming with us.
Well, I wasn't hanging out with Springsteen, but I did go and see the new film Blinded by the Light, which is a wonderful film, and Bruce was there and made a little surprise appearance on stage, and it was pretty cool to be in Asbury Park and seeing Bruce Springsteen in Asbury Park. Yeah,
absolutely,
it was great.
Yeah. All right, well, Jed, thank you for you've been on the podcast before. Thank you for coming back. Best of luck with this year's 20th annual Americana Fest and everything going forward.
Look forward to seeing you in Nashville.
I'm pounding the pavement, waiting on a stationary letter from a Nashville man. It's the
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.